Father Plautus relates that a nobleman riding one day on a fine and strike a great lay an orsome lady whom he saw, thrown from the horse into the from which he was besmeared and covered with mud. He was so full of confusion at this accident that at the same moment he resolved to become a religious, saying, "Treacherous world, thou hast mocked me, but I will mock thee. Thou hast played me a game, I will play thee another, for I will have no more peace with thee, and from this hour I resolve to forsake thee and to become a friar." And in fact, he became a religious and lived in religion a holy life. Means to be employed for preserving a religious vocation in the world. He then who wishes to be faithful to the divine call ought not only to resolve to follow it, but to follow it promptly, if he does not wish to expose himself to the evident danger of losing his vocation. And in case he should by necessity be forced to wait, he ought to use all diligence to preserve it as the most precious jewel he could have. The means to preserve vocation are three in number: secrecy, prayer, and recollection. First, secrecy. First, generally speaking, he must keep his vocation secret from everybody except his spiritual father, because commonly the men of the world scruple not to say to young men who are called to the religious state that one may serve God everywhere and therefore in the world also. And it is wonderful that such propositions come sometimes out of the mouth of priests and even of religious, but of such religious only as have either become so without vocation or do not know what vocation is. Yes, without doubt, he who is not called to the religious state may serve God in every place, but not he who is called to it and then from his own inclination wishes to remain in the world. Such as one, as I have said above, can with difficulty serve God and lead a good life. It is especially necessary to keep the vocation secret from parents. It was indeed the opinion of Luther, as Bellarmine relates, that children entering religion without the consent of their parents commit a sin. For, said he, children are bound to obey their parents in all things. But this opinion has generally been rejected by councils and the Holy Fathers. The 10th Council of Toledo expressly says, "It is lawful for children to become religious without the consent of their parents, provided they have attained the age of puberty." These are the words, "It shall not be lawful for parents to put their children in a religious order after they have attained their 14th year. After this age, it shall be lawful for children to take upon themselves the yoke of religious observance, whether it be with the consent of their parents or only the wish of their own hearts." The same is prescribed in the Council of Triber, and is taught by St. Ambrose, St. Jerome, St. Augustine, St. Bernard, St. Thomas, and others, with St. John Chrysostom, who writes in general, "When parents stand in the way in spiritual things, they ought not even to be recognized." Some doctors then say that when a child called by God to the religious state could easily and securely obtain the consent of his parents, without any danger on their part of hindering him from following his vocation, it is becoming that he should seek to obtain their blessing. This doctrine could be held speculatively, but not so in practice, because in practice such a danger always exists. It will be well to discuss this point fully in order to do away with certain scruples which some entertain. It is certain that in the choice of a state of life, children are not bound to obey parents. Thus the doctors, with common accord, teach with St. Thomas, who says, "Servants are not bound to obey their masters, nor children their parents, with regard to contracting matrimony, preserving virginity, and such like things." Nevertheless, with regard to the state of marriage, F. Pinamonti, in his treatise on religious vocation, is justly of the opinion of Sanchez, Comanicio, and others, who hold that such a child is bound to take counsel of his parents, because in such matters they may have more experience than the young. But speaking then of religious vocation, the above-mentioned Pinamonti wisely adds that a child is not bound at all to take counsel of his parents, because in this matter they have not any experience, and through interest are commonly changed into enemies, as St. Thomas also remarks when speaking of religious vocation. Frequently, he says, our friends, according to the flesh, are opposed to our spiritual good. For fathers often prefer that their children should be damned with themselves rather than be saved away from them. Whence St. Bernard exclaims, O hard father, O cruel mother, whose consolation is the death of their son, who wish rather that we perish with them than reign without them. God, says a grave author, Pro Recta, that he calls one to a perfect life, wishes one to forget one's father, saying, hearken, O daughter, and see and incline thine ear, and forget thy people and thy father's house. By this, then, he adds, that Lord certainly admonishes us that he who is called ought by no means to allow the counsel of parents to intervene. If God will have a soul who is called by him forget its father and its father's house, without doubt, he suggests by this that he who is called to the religious state ought not, before he follows the call, to interpose the counsel of the carnal friends of his household. Saint Cyril, explaining what Jesus Christ said to the youth mentioned above, no man putting his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God, comments on it, and says that he who asks for time to confer with his parents in reference to his vocation is exactly the one who is declared by our Lord to be unfit for heaven. In order to confer with his parents, he looks back, who seeks for delay. Whence St. Thomas absolutely advises those who are called to religion to abstain from deliberating on their vocation with their relatives. From this deliberation, the relatives of the flesh are before all to be excluded. For it is said, treat thy cause with thy friend. But the relatives of the flesh are in this affair not our friends, but our enemies. According to the saying of our Lord, a man's enemies are those of his household. If then, for following one's vocation, it would be a great error to ask the counsel of parents, it would be a greater one still to ask their permission and to wait for it. For such a demand cannot be made without an evident danger of losing the vocation, as often as there is a probable fear that parents would exert themselves to prevent it. And in fact, the saints, when they are called to leave the world, left their homes without giving their parents so much as an intimation of it. Thus acted St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Francis Xavier, St. Philip Neri, St. Louis Bertrand, and we know that the Lord has even by miracles approved of these glorious flights. St. Peter of Alcantara, when he went to the monastery to become a religious and was fleeing from the house of his mother, under whose obedience he had lived since the death of his father, found himself prevented by a wide river from advancing any farther. He recommended himself to God and at the same instant saw himself transported to the other side. Likewise, when St. Stanislaus Kostka fled from home without the permission of his father, his brother set out after him in great haste in a carriage, but having almost overtaken him, the horses, in spite of all the violence used against them, would not advance a step farther, till turning towards the city they began to run at full speed. In like manner, Blessed Oringa of Waldrano in Tuscany, being promised in marriage to a young man, fled from the house of her parents in order to consecrate herself to God. But the river Arno, opposing itself to her course, after a short prayer she saw it divide and form, as it were, two walls of crystal to let her pass through with dry feet. Therefore, my very beloved brother, if you are called by God to leave the world, be very careful not to make your resolution known to your parents, and content to be thus blessed by God, seek to execute it as promptly as you can and without their knowledge, if you would not expose yourself to the great danger of losing your vocation. For generally speaking, relatives, as has been said above, especially fathers and mothers, oppose the execution of such resolutions, and although they may be endowed with piety, interest, and passion, nevertheless render them so blind that under various pretexts they scruple not to thwart with all their might the vocation of their children. We read in the life of Father Paul Cinieri, the younger, that his mother, though a matron much given to prayer, left nevertheless no means untried to prevent her son from entering the religious state to which he was called. We also read in the life of Monsignor Cavalieri, Bishop of Troyes, that his father, although a man of great piety, used every means to prevent his son from entering the congregation of pious workmen, which notwithstanding he afterwards did, and even went so far as to bring against him a lawsuit in the ecclesiastical court. And how many other fathers, notwithstanding that they were men of piety and prayer, have not in such cases been seen to change and to become possessed, as it were, of the devil? For under no other circumstance does hell seem to employ more formidable arms than when there is a question of preventing those who are called by the religious state from executing their resolution. For this reason, be also very careful not to communicate your design to your friends, who will not scruple to dissuade you from it, or at least to divulge the secret, so that the knowledge of it will easily come to the ears of your parents. On prayer, in the second place, it is necessary to know that these vocations are only preserved by prayer. He who gives up prayer will certainly give up his vocation. It is necessary to pray and to pray much, and therefore let him who feels himself called not omit to make every morning after rising an hour of mental prayer, or at least half an hour, in his own room, if he can do so there without molestation, and if not, in the church, and likewise half an hour in the evening. Let him not neglect also to make every day, without fail, a visit to the Most Holy Sacrament, as also to the Most Blessed Virgin Mary, in order to obtain the grace of perseverance in his vocation. Let him likewise not omit to receive Holy Communion thrice or at least twice a week. His meditations ought almost always to be on this point of the vocation, considering how great a favor from God he has received in being thus called by him, how much more easily he will secure his eternal salvation if he be faithful to God in following his vocation, and on the contrary, to how great a danger of being damned he exposes himself if he be unfaithful. Let him then especially place before his eyes the hour of death, and consider the contentment that he will then feel if he shall have obeyed God, and the pains and the remorse he would experience if he should die in the world. To this end, I shall add at the end of this some considerations on which he may make his mental prayer. It is moreover necessary that all his prayers to Jesus and Mary, and especially those after communion and in the visits, be directed to obtain perseverance. In all his prayers and communions, let him always renew the offering of himself to God by saying, "Behold, O Lord, I am no more mine, I am thine. Already have I given myself to thee, and now I renew this, my offering of my whole self. Accept of me and give me strength to be faithful to thee and to retire as quickly as possible into thy house." In the third place, it is necessary that he be recollected, which will not be possible for him unless he withdraws from worldly conversations and amusements. What, in short, as long as we are in the world, is enough to cause the loss of vocation? A mere nothing. One day of amusement, a word from a friend, a passion we do not mortify, a little attachment, a thought of fear, a resentment we do not overcome, suffices to bring to naught all our resolutions of retiring from the world or of giving ourselves entirely to God. Wherefore we ought to keep perfectly recollected, detaching ourselves from everything of this world. We ought during this time to think of nothing but prayer and frequenting the sacraments, and to be nowhere but at home and in church. Let him who will not do so, but distracts himself by pastimes, be persuaded that he will without doubt lose his vocation. He will remain with the remorse of not having followed it, but he certainly will not follow it. Oh, how many, by neglecting these precautions, have lost first their vocation and afterwards their souls. On disposition required for entering religion. He who feels himself to be called by God to a religious institute in which reigns exact observance ought to know that the end of every regular observance is to follow as exactly as possible the footsteps and examples of the most holy life of Jesus Christ, who led a life entirely detached and mortified, full of suffering and contempt. He then who resolves to enter such a holy state must at the same time resolve to enter it for the sake of suffering and denying himself in all things, as Jesus Christ himself has declared to those who wish perfectly to follow him. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. He then who wishes to enter religion must firmly establish within himself this resolution to go to suffer, and to suffer much, so that afterwards he may not give way to temptations, when having entered he feels depressed under the hardships and privations of the poor and mortified life which is there led. Many, on entering communities of exact observance, take not the proper means of finding peace therein and of becoming saints, because they only place before their eyes the advantages of the community life, such as the solitude, the quiet, the freedom from the troubles caused by relatives, from strife and other disagreeable matters, and from the cares consequent on being obliged to think of one's lodging, food, and clothing. There is no doubt that every religious is only too much indebted to his order, which delivers him from so many troubles, and thus procures for him so great a facility to serve God perfectly in peace, continually furnishing with so many means for the welfare of his soul, so many good examples from his companions, so much good advice from his superiors who watch for his benefit, so many exercises conducive to eternal salvation. All this is true, but with all this he must also, in order not to be deprived of so blessed a lot, resolve to embrace all the sufferings he may, on the other hand, meet within the order. For if he does not embrace them with love, he will never obtain that full peace which God gives to those who overcome themselves. To him that overcomes I will give the hidden manna. For the peace which God gives his faithful servants to taste is hidden, nor is it known by the men of the world, who, seeing their mortified life, know not how to envy them, but pity them, and call them the unhappy ones of this earth. But they see the cross, the unction they do not see, says Saint Bernard. They see their mortifications, but they do not see the contentment that God gives them to enjoy. It is true that in the spiritual life one has to suffer, but, says Saint Teresa, when one resolves to suffer, the pain is gone. Nay, the pains themselves turn into joy. My daughter, so the Lord said one day to Saint Bridget, the treasure of my graces seems to be surrounded with thorns, but for him who overcomes the first stings, all is changed into sweetness. And then those delights which God gives to his beloved souls to enjoy in their prayers, in their communions, in their solitude, those lights, those holy ardors and embraces, that quiet of conscience, that blessed hope of eternal life, who can ever understand them if he does not experience them? One drop of the consolations of God, said Saint Teresa, is worth more than all the consolations and the pleasures of the world. Our most gracious God knows well how to give to him who suffers something for his sake, even in this valley of tears, the experience of the foretaste of the glory of the blessed. For in this is properly verified that which David says, Thou who framest labor in commandment. In the spiritual life, God, announcing pains, tediousness, death, seems to frame labor, but in fact afterwards it is not so. for spiritual life brings to them who entirely give themselves to God that peace which, as St. Paul says, surpasseth all understanding. It surpasses all the pleasures of the world and of worldlings, whence we see a religious more content in a poor cell than all the monarchs in their royal palaces. O taste and see that the Lord is sweet. But on the other hand, he must be persuaded that he who does not resolve to suffer and to overcome himself in the things contrary to his inclinations will never be able to enjoy this true peace, though he should have already entered religion. To him that overcomes, I will give the hidden manna. It is then necessary that he who wishes to be admitted into an order of exact observance should enter with a mind determined to overcome himself in everything by expelling from his heart every inclination and desire that is not from God nor for God, so that he must detach himself from all things, and especially from the four following: from his comforts, from his parents, from self-esteem, from his own will. First, detachment from his comforts. In religion, after the year of novitiate, one makes, besides the vows of chastity and obedience, also the vow of poverty, in consequence of which one can never possess anything as one's individual property, not even a pin, no income, no money, or other things. The community will provide him with all that he needs. But the vow of poverty does not suffice to make one a true follower of Jesus Christ if one does not afterwards embrace with joy of spirit all the inconveniences of poverty. Not poverty, but the love of poverty is a virtue, says Saint Bernard, and he means to say that for one to become a saint, it is not enough to be poor only if one does not love also the inconveniences of poverty. Oh, how many would wish to be poor and similar to Jesus Christ, says Thomas a Kempis. They wish to be poor but without any want, and so that they be in want of nothing. In a word, they would wish the honor and the reward of poverty, but not the inconveniences of poverty. It is easy to understand that in religion no one will seek for things that are superfluous, cloths of silk, costly food, furniture of value, and the like, but he may desire to have all things that are necessary, and these he may be unable to get. For then it is he gives proof that he truly loves poverty, when things that are needful, such as necessary clothing, bed covering, or food, happen to be wanting, and yet he remains content and is not troubled. And what kind of poverty would that be to suffer if he were never in want of anything necessary? F. Baltazar Alvarez says that in order truly to love poverty, we must also love the effects of poverty. That is, as he enumerates them, cold, hunger, thirst, and contempt. In religion, everyone ought not only to be content with that which is given to him, without ever asking for anything of which, through the neglect of the stewards, he should be in want, which would be a great defect, but he ought also to prepare himself sometimes to bear the want even of those simple things that the rule allows. For it may happen that sometimes he is in want of clothes, coverings, linen, or such like things, and then he has to be satisfied with that little which has been given him, without complaining or being disquieted at seeing himself in want even of what is necessity. He who has not this spirit, let him not think of entering religion, because this is a sign that he is not called thereto, or that he has not the will to embrace the spirit of the Institute. He who goes to serve God in his house, says Saint Teresa, ought to consider that he is going not to be well treated for God, but to suffer for God. 2. Detachment from his parents. He who wishes to enter religion must detach himself from his parents and forget them altogether. For in religious houses of exact observance, detachment from parents is put in practice in the highest degree, in order perfectly to follow the doctrine of Jesus Christ, who said, I came not to send peace, but the sword. I came to set a man at variance with his father, etc. And then added the reason, a man's enemies shall be they of his own household. And this is especially the case, as has been remarked above, in this point of religious vocation. When one's leaving the world is in question, there are no worse enemies than parents, who either through interest or passion prefer to become enemies of God by turning their children away from their vocation rather than to give their consent to it. Oh, how many parents shall we see in the Valley of Josaphat damned for having made their children or nephews lose their vocation? And how many youths shall we see damned who, in order to please their parents, and by not detaching themselves from them, have lost their vocation and afterwards their souls? Whence Jesus declares to us, If any man hate not his father, etc., he cannot be my disciple. Let him then who wishes to enter a religious order of perfect observance and to become a true disciple of Jesus Christ resolve to forget his parents altogether. When anyone has already entered religion, let him remember that he must practice then the same detachment from his parents. Let him know that he cannot go to visit his parents in their own house, except in the case of some dangerous illness of his father or mother, or of some other urgent necessity, though always with the permission of the superior. Otherwise, to go to the house of one's parents without the most express permission would be considered in religion as a most notable and scandalous fault. In religion, it is also considered a great defect even to ask permission or to show a desire of seeing parents or of speaking with them. St. Charles Borromeo said that when he visited the house of his parents, he always, after his return, found himself less fervent in spirit. And thus, let him who goes to the house of his parents by his own will, and not through a positive obedience to his superiors, be persuaded that he will leave it either under temptation or be cold and lukewarm. St. Vincent of Paul could only be induced once to visit his country and his parents, and thus out of pure necessity. And he said that the love of home and country was a great impediment to his spiritual progress. He said also that many, on account of having visited their country, had become so tender towards their relatives that they were like flies, which, being once entangled in a cobweb, cannot extricate themselves from it. He added, For that one time that I went, though it was for a short time only, and though I took care to prevent in my relatives every hope of help from me, notwithstanding, I felt at leaving them such a pain that I ceased not to weep all along the road, and was for 3 months harassed by the thought of succoring them. Finally, God in his mercy took that temptation from me. Let him know, moreover, that no one may write to his parents without permission and without showing the letter to the superior. Otherwise, he would be guilty of a most grievous fault that is not to be tolerated in religion and should be punished with severity. For from this might come 1,000 disorders tending to destroy the religious spirit. Let especially the newcomer know that during the novitiate, this is observed with the greatest rigor. For novices during their year of novitiate do not easily obtain permission to talk to their parents or to write to them. Finally, let him know that in case a subject should become sick, it would be a notable defect to ask or to show an inclination to go to his own house for his restoration to health, under the plea of being better taken care of or of enjoying the benefit of his native air. The air of his own country becomes almost always, or rather always, hurtful and pestilential to the spirit of the subject. And if he should ever say that he wishes to be cured at home, in order not to subject the order to expenses for remedies, let him know that the order has charity enough to take sufficient care of the sick. As to the change of air, the superiors will think of that, and if that of one house has not been beneficial to him, they will send him to another. And as for remedies, they will even sell the books, if need be, to provide for the sick. And so let him be sure that divine providence will not fail him. And if the Lord should decree against his recovery, he ought to conform to the will of God without even mentioning the word home. The greatest grace that he who enters an order can desire is to die, when God wills it, in the house of God, assisted by the brethren of his order, and not in the secular house in the midst of his relatives. 3. Detachment from self-esteem. He must also be altogether detached from all self-esteem. Many leave their country, their comforts, and parents, but carry with them a certain esteem for themselves. But this is the most hurtful attachment of all. The greatest sacrifice that we can make to God is to give to him not only goods, pleasures, and home, but ourselves also by leaving ourselves. This is that denying of oneself which Jesus Christ recommends above all to his followers. And in order to deny oneself, one must first place underfoot all self-esteem by desiring and embracing every imaginable contempt, that he may meet with it in religion, as for instance to see others whom perhaps he thinks less deserving preferred to himself, or to be considered unfit to be employed, or only employed in lower and more laborious occupations. He ought to know that in the house of God those charges are the highest and the most honorable that are imposed by obedience. God forbid that anyone should seek or aspire to any office or charge of preeminence. This would be a strange thing in religion, and he would be noted as proud and ambitious, and as such should be put in penance, and should especially be mortified in this point. Better would it be, perhaps, that a religious order should be destroyed than there should enter into it that accursed pest of ambition, which, when it enters, disfigures the most exemplary communities and the most beautiful works of God. But he ought to feel even consoled in spirit when he sees himself mocked and despised by his companions. I say consoled in spirit, for as to the flesh, this will be impossible, nor need a subject be uneasy when he sees that he resents it. It is enough that the spirit embraces it, and that he enjoys at it in the superior part of the soul. Thus also, seeing himself continually reprimanded and mortified by all, not only by superiors, but also by equals and inferiors, he ought heartily and with a tranquil mind to thank those who thus reprimand him and have the charity to admonish him, answering that he will be more attentive not to fall into that fault again. One of the greatest desires of the saints in this world was to be condemned for the love of Jesus Christ. It was this that St. John of the Cross asked for when Jesus Christ appeared to him with the cross on his shoulder and said, "John, ask from me what thou wishest," and St. John answered, "O Lord, to suffer and to be despised for thee." The doctors teach, with St. Francis de Sales, that the highest degree of humility we can have is to be pleased with abjections and humiliations. And in this consists also one of the greatest merits we can have with God. One contempt suffered in peace for the love of God is of greater value in his sight than 1,000 disciplines and 1,000 fasts. It is necessary to know that to suffer contempt either from superiors or from companions is a thing unavoidable even in the most holy communities. Read the lives of the saints, and you will see how many mortifications were encountered by St. Francis Regis, St. Francis of Jerome, Father Torres, and others. The Lord sometimes permits that even among saints there should exist, though without their fault, certain natural antipathies, or at least a certain diversity of character among subjects of the greatest piety, which will cause them to suffer many contradictions. At other times, false reports will be spread and believed. God himself will permit this in order that the subjects may have occasion to exercise themselves in patience and humility. In short, he will gain little in religion and lose much who cannot quietly put up with contempt and contradiction, and therefore he who enters religion to give himself entirely to God ought to be ashamed not to know how to bear contempt when he appears before Jesus Christ, who was filled with opprobriums for love of us. Let everyone be attentive to this and resolve to be pleased in religion with all objections, and to prepare himself to suffer many of them, for without the least doubt he will have many to bear. Otherwise, the disquiet caused by contradictions and contempt, badly borne with, might trouble him so much as to make him lose his vocation and chase him out of religion. Oh, how many have lost their vocation on account of such impatience in humiliations! But of what service to the order or to God can he be who does not know how to bear contempt for his sake? And how can one ever be said to be dead according to that promise which he made to Jesus Christ on entering religion, to die to himself if he remained alive to resentment and disquiet when he sees himself humbled? Out of the order with such subjects so attached to their own esteem, out with them. It is well for them to go as soon as possible, that they may not infect the rest also with their pride. In religion, everyone ought to be dead, and especially to his own self-esteem. Otherwise, it is better for him not to enter or to depart again if he has already entered. Number 4, detachment from his own will. He who enters religion must altogether renounce his own will, consecrating it entirely to holy obedience. Of all things, this is the most necessary. What does it avail to leave comforts, parents, and honors if we still carry into religion our own will? In this principally consists the denial of ourselves, the spiritual death, and the entire surrender of ourselves to Jesus Christ. The gift of the heart, that is, of the will, is what pleases him most, and what he wishes from the children of religion. Otherwise, if we do not entirely detach ourselves from our own will and renounce it in all mortifications, all meditations and prayers, and all other sacrifices will be of little avail. It is then evident that this is the greatest merit we can have before God, and this is the only and sure way of pleasing God in all things, so that when we can, each one of us say what Jesus our Savior said, I do always the things that please him. Certainly, he who in religion lives without self-will may say and hope that in all that he does he pleases God, whether he studies or prays or hears confessions, whether he goes to the refectory or to recreation or to rest. For in religion, not a step is made, not a breath drawn, but in obedience to the rule or to superiors. The world does not know, and even certain persons given to spirituality have little idea of, the great value of a community life under obedience. It is true that outside of religious communities, there are to be found many persons who do much, and may be more than those who live under obedience. They preach, do penance, pray, and fast, but in all this they consult more or less their own will. God grant that at the day of judgment, they may not have to lament as those mentioned in Scripture. Why have we fasted, and thou hast not regarded? Have we humbled ourselves, and thou hast not taken notice? Behold, in the day of your fast, your own will is found. On which passage Saint Bernard remarks, self-will is a great evil, for through it that which is good in itself may be for you no good at all. This to be understood when in all these exercises we seek not God, but ourselves. On the contrary, he who does all by obedience is sure that in all he pleases God. The Venerable Mother Mary of Jesus said that she prized so much her vocation to religion principally for two reasons. The first was that in the monastery she enjoyed always the presence and the company of Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. And the other was that there By obedience, she entirely belonged to God, sacrificing to him her own will. It is related by F. Rodriguez that after the death of Dosthenes, the disciple of St. Dorotheus, the Lord revealed that in those 5 years he had lived under obedience, though by reason of his infirmities he could not practice the austerities of the other monks, yet by virtue of obedience he had merited the reward of St. Paul the Hermit and of St. Anthony the Abbot. He then who wishes to enter religion must resolve to renounce altogether his own will, and to will only what holy obedience wills. God preserve any religious from ever letting escape from his mouth the words, I will or I will not. But in all things, even when asked by superiors what he desires, he should only answer, I wish that which holy obedience wills. And provided there is no evident sin, he ought in every command imposed on him to obey blindly and without examination, because the duty of examining and deciding the doubts belongs not to him, but to his superiors. Otherwise, if in obeying he does not submit his own judgment to that of the superior, his obedience is imperfect. Saint Ignatius of Loyola said that prudence in things of obedience is not required in subjects, but in superiors. And if there is prudence in obeying, it is to obey without prudence. Saint Bernard says, perfect obedience is indiscreet. And in another place he says, for a prudent novice to remain in the congregation is an impossible thing. And adding the reason for it, he says, to judge belongs to the superior and to obey to the subject. But to make progress in this virtue of obedience on which all depends, he must always keep his mind ready to do all that for which he feels the greatest repugnance. And on the contrary, he must be prepared to bear it quietly when he sees that all he seeks or desires is refused to him. It will happen that when he wishes to be in solitude, to apply himself to prayer or study, he will be the most employed in exterior occupations. For though it is true that in religion one leads as much as possible a solitary life when at home, and that for this end there are many hours of silence, the retreat each year of 10 days in perfect silence and of one day each month, besides the 15 days before the receiving of the habit and 1 of 15 before the profession when the vows are made, nevertheless, if it is an order of priests called to work and to be employed for the salvation of souls, the subject, if he is continually employed in this by obedience, ought to be content with the prayers and exercises of the community. He must be prepared sometimes to go even without these when obedience will have it so, without either excusing himself or being disquieted, being well persuaded of that of which St. Mary Magdalene of Passy was so confident when she said that all the things which are done through obedience are but so many prayers. Please fast forward and go to tape number 9.